Father, I thank you for every person in this room. I ask you to bring blessing and strength and light and encouragement, revelation of your great love and your power through your Son, Yeshua. Build us up and encourage us today and fit us for your purposes. And grant that we would grow in love as brothers and sisters, love for each other, love for you, and in fulfilling your calling, the calling you've given each of us. Remove fear from us. Open our mouths. And I ask you, Father, in the name of your Son, to help me right now. In Yeshua's name. So, Judah got up and read from Mark 7. When he first said Mark 7, I thought about hand washing. But that wasn't the part he read, which probably makes it simpler. So when he read about Yeshua and this man, he was deaf and had a speech impediment. They begged him to lay his hand on him. At the point where I think I misheard, although maybe I didn't mishear, even if I did mishear. You think that's possible? It could be both. When he said that his, let's see, you can tell me if you remember, but and his ears were open and his tongue was released and he spoke plainly. Did you say that his mouth was open? Was that, it's just a question. Was that the words you, were those the words you spoke? Well, what I actually heard in that moment was not just something from the scripture, but it came to me as a prophetic word that mouths would be opened. And then after that, I thought, was he just reading the passage or did he speak it that way? And I wasn't sure, but you did speak it that way. So it was what you're thinking in your mind or it's what you...
I'm not sure what I said, but I know that was going through my mind.
Okay, so it was going through your mind. I think it did come out of your mouth. Yeah. So I have a couple of things to say about that. In the liturgy, there's always this, open my mouth, Lord, and my lips will proclaim your praise. And frequently, when we get to that part, I think, okay, where am I? Where maybe is each one at? I don't try to answer where each one is at. I just think about it. It's like you could say that from a standpoint of having a closed mouth and be asking the Lord to open it and saying, if you open it, I will proclaim your praise. You could be saying it as it already having been opened and wanting to continue speaking his praise. You could want to speak it more boldly or more often or more freely. I mean, you can have a number of different points. Like I imagine sometimes people are feeling, if they're thinking about it, and maybe if they're not, they're still feeling that way. Well, my mouth is kind of stuck shut, but I'd really like the Lord to open it, and if he does, I will proclaim his praise. So what I heard, it was a word that mouths would be opened. And so here's the result of meeting Yeshua. This guy, I don't know much about him. Let's take another look at him. He returned from the region of Tyre and went through Sidon to the Sea of Galilee in the region of Decapolis, and they brought to him a man who was deaf and had a speech impediment, and they begged him to lay his hand on him. And taking him aside from the crowd privately, he put his fingers into his ears, and after spitting, does anybody know where he spit? He spit. What? Yes, but where did this spittle end up? In another case, he made little like mud with his own spit. And I mean, as you know, we all love to have someone's spit put on us, right? Well, that's what I picture. After spitting, touched his tongue. So I don't know if we can prove it one way or the other. Maybe he spit in his hand and touched his tongue. That reminds me of a story of my brother Mark one time pinning me down, and I won't tell you the whole thing. But well, let's just say that something I didn't want in contact with me was placed in contact with me, and I thought it was really gross. Certainly, if he had spit in my mouth, if it was open, I would have thought that was gross. But at any rate, most of us probably don't want anybody else's spit in our mouth, at least not most people's, right? So, I mean, the thing is, it seems offensive. And Yeshua is the rock of offense. And it's spoken of him that those who fall upon the rock will be broken, but those upon whom the rock falls will be crushed. You can end up in one of two places, underneath or falling upon. And in the cases where people were very proud and said things like, well, didn't he come from Nazareth? Or whatever, you know, whatever the thing was. Things didn't seem to happen so much for those people. But these people came believing. I don't know what the deaf and dumb man actually believed. But the people that brought him seemed to think that he would be healed if they could get him to him, that Yeshua could heal him. So I was thinking, let's see, do I want Yeshua sticking his fingers in my ears? Do I want his spit in my mouth? Do I want Yeshua to do the thing that actually really I find to be humiliating? Because all of us, at least in our romanticized way of thinking about the accounts, would think, oh yes, if I was deaf and dumb, I would just love that experience. I would just want to throw everything at his feet. I would want to throw my heart wide open and let everything about me be seen so that I would just be healed. It's easy to say that, but at the same time, don't we struggle with things? And don't we sometimes actually, though theoretically at least we believe we cannot hide anything from God, don't we still do it? And don't we say, well, I don't know, if I've got to have your spit in my mouth or your finger in my mouth or your finger in my ear, or if I've got to actually let you touch this thing inside of me, well, I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure I really want that. I'm kind of comfortable with this, and if I have to go past that, and then that would change me, and I'd have to do things that, or would be enabled to do things that maybe I'm afraid I can't do and still don't necessarily really believe you can cause me to be able to do, even though I know you can do everything. Aren't there things like that? Don't we struggle with things sometimes where it's not exactly like everything in us wants him to touch it? Aren't there things like that? So many loud answers. I've certainly had things like that. There's at least one that I ran from for 20 years. I understand something about Moses saying, well, you know, my tongue is stuck to the roof of my mouth. Send somebody else. Don't send me. You got better choices. I understand that. I mean, it's not entirely fair, but I tend to have a distrust of somebody that never tried to get out of God's calling for them. If they just wanted it so bad that they had to get it, sometimes I wonder, is this their agenda? But the thing is, the scripture do say, though, that the one that desires to be an overseer or an elder desires a good thing. So I think it actually is possible, maybe if you're less wounded than I was at a certain point, to actually want to become that without it being an ego thing. But the thing is, my ego was bent the other direction, so my ego wanted to avoid it. But maybe the people that decide that that's what they want have decided because they've already dealt with their ego. At any rate, if it's about what we personally want, mostly getting that from the Lord, that might indicate that there's some mixture, that it's not just a desire for his will, but a desire that his will be what our will is. But so anyway, in this case, he meets this guy, and he puts his fingers in his ears, and after spitting, touched his tongue. And looking up into heaven, did you know Yeshua sighed? How do you say that word? Ephphatha. How do you say it? Ephphatha. That is, be opened. Do you know how to say it? Is it Aramaic or is it... Anyway, be opened. And his ears were open, his tongue was released, and he spoke plainly. Can you imagine a deaf mute in a service getting to that part? Open my mouth, O Lord, and my tongue will proclaim your praise. Thinking it, saying it, as vigorously as he could, though being mute and deaf, because you can read. And all of a sudden, the ears and the mouth are open. That's what happened. I mean, he wasn't going through the liturgy, but this is what happened to him. And Yeshua charged him to tell no one. Some of us would say, oh, that'd be easy. If he told me to tell nobody about what he's done for me, that would be easy. Don't tell anybody. But the more he charged them, the more zealously they proclaimed it. And they were astonished beyond measure, saying, he has done all things well. He even makes the deaf hear and the mute speak. So My impression is this guy's mouth was open, and he started speaking the praises of God in Yeshua, and those that brought him did too. Maybe their mouths were opened at the same time that his mouth was opened. They had an encounter. It changed their deaf-mute friend. I think maybe it changed them too. We ask that every week, open my mouth, you know, or state it, proclaim it. I don't know, is it a request or is it a statement? If you open my mouth, I will proclaim your praise, or open my mouth, please, and I will proclaim your praise, or maybe both. It could be both. There isn't really a week that goes by I don't think about that when that line comes. So, at any rate, this guy had no power to heal himself. His friends didn't have any power to heal him, but they believed that Yeshua could do it, and it happened. So, mouth was open, and his praise was proclaimed. So as I said, I heard it as a prophetic word. And, I mean, if you're not familiar with, like, there's sometimes confusion. Paul says to the Corinthians, you can all prophesy. He doesn't say all of you are prophets, or that all of you can be prophets. All of you occupy the office of a prophet. That's not what he's saying. He's saying that the people of God can prophesy. It's not necessarily such a big mysterious thing, and it can take a number of forms. But I heard that as a word, that mouths would be opened. So what I want to say to all of you, and I did hear it, mouths. So that would mean at least two, maybe every mouth here. Maybe more mouths than are here by virtue of what happens with some mouths that are here. Maybe mouths could be opened like, you know, dominoes, one tips over, hits the next one, and it just keeps going out. That's sort of what the gospel was supposed to do, and by the way, it is what the gospel did. And it is still doing that. And there is a lot of discouragement among some people, but I don't know the current statistics, but in roughly, you know, if you look at the last 20, 30 years, it was quite a while ago I first heard that, and you know, the numbers are basically available in some sense. More people have come to faith in Yeshua in the very near past than in all the other years since he walked on the earth. More people have come to believe in him in a very short space of time during most of, well, a good part of us have been alive that whole time. Far, far more people have come to faith than did in the first century, second century, third, and all the way up to the last century combined in that space of time. And sometimes the way people talk about darkness getting so much darker and everything getting so horrible, it doesn't end up giving the truth that the gospel hasn't been quenched, and that no matter how dark darkness gets, that the gospel will continue to go forward, and the Lord will continue to get a harvest, and that the light shines brighter and brighter until the noonday, even while the darkness is getting darker. So I just encourage each of you to grab a hold of what the Lord opened Judah's mouth to speak as to whether he's telling you he wants to open your mouth in a new way. Not that your mouth has been closed, that you haven't spoken, but I think there's always more, like, right? We can always grow, we can always change, and the Lord is always making us more and more to match the likeness of his Son. So that doesn't stop. And if you're anything like me, you encounter fears in your path. Do you ever find that the dog that's snarling at you, or wolf or whatever it is, in your path, it's actually a thought that's in your own head? And you're walking along the path, and all of a sudden that thought is snarling at you, and you don't dare walk past it because you're afraid it's going to eat you up or chew you up or maybe just maim you. And it's the fear that's in your mind. How many times can you think of you didn't move past something, and the thing you didn't move past was the thought in your mind, which was a fearful thought about what might come about? I couldn't think of a lot of them. You know, I don't know how dangerous is the big bad wolf, because he's going to threaten you, right? There is a wolf, there's a devil, there's an enemy. And he wants us to get scared, and he says, "I will huff and I will puff and I will blow your house down." But the Lord says, "I will build the body of Messiah, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it." And that applies to all that are in the body of Messiah. So the question is, should we be afraid of the big bad wolf, or should we just believe that our papa can beat up their papa? Our papa is stronger than their papa. My dad can beat up your dad. I've heard kids say that. And in some cases, their dad is willing to beat up the other kid's dad. Too bit terrible thing, but where are we gonna stand? And you know, there are a lot of things that can strike fear. I won't tell you too much about it, but because of an old high school acquaintance that I got back in touch with who has come to faith, not sure how long ago, I inquired because I was a little confused when I came back in contact with him through Facebook. And I mentioned this before. I said, "Well, how did that happen?" He said, "Well, I was driving between said city and said other city. I can't remember the two cities. And I don't know why, but I listened to this radio preacher. And I was just completely convicted of my sin." And, you know, he came to faith on his way somewhere with no intention of encountering Yeshua. And it's obvious to me he's different, though he, you know, he has his struggles. Obviously different. And I learned something about his son, who is a pretty mixed up guy. Reminds me in certain ways of one of my own family members. And he had certain attitudes about Israel. I says, "Oh, I'd like to talk to him." And he says, "Well, why would you want to do that?" Basically, it's like, "Well, I know you, and you're his son, and so that matters to me, and I just like to communicate with people." And so he put me in touch with him. But he said, if you do get in touch with him, he says, "God have mercy on you both if you do." That's what he said. And I started a conversation with him. And at a certain point, he said certain things. And I had this visceral thing happen inside of me. And I mean, it just permeated my whole. I mean, it was a physical feeling. And when that particular thing happens in a certain way, there's always a sort of a phrase or a sentence that comes. It's a sentence that comes to my mind, and it is this: "Oh, I've met you before." Now, it's 3,000 miles away. He can hardly stick his finger in my eye or punch me in the face or, what, really do me any harm, right? But have you ever noticed words are dangerous? It's not open my mouth and I'll say whatever I want. I took a long pause and I thought, yeah, okay, there it is. That's what the battle in his life is about this spirit. And I told myself, don't just go messing with it. Don't just say something out of your own head. If there's going to be any point in this communication whatsoever, it better be coming from the spirit and not just from the impulse to argue. And I, by the way, now and then have the impulse to argue. Just argue. Like, I could even feel holy when I just want to argue. I could be so convinced I'm right that I'm sure that I'm just speaking what God once said. But, you know, it oftentimes doesn't actually work that way. It's like, oh, wait a minute. Led by the Spirit. Am I being led? Or am I having a reaction? And I just think this is the coolest, slickest thing to say that's going to just win. Well, I mean, I have learned that when you're dealing with that kind of thing, you cannot just win. You can't say the right thing that will just win. You can't change the person's mind, even if all you say is exactly, perfectly the truth. You can't win just because you know something. And they don't have to agree with you no matter how right you are. And if they ever do, it's not because you're right. It's because God's right. And I don't really want to win, at least when I'm thinking straight. I don't want to win by me being right. If there is an actual victory, it will be because God wins, and he's right. And maybe he can use me in the process. And I do want to be used. But in my back and forth with this young man, I took long breaks before even looking at what his responses were, because I realized very clearly, it's like, okay, this is a spirit, I know it. And I got to regulate myself. If I can't regulate myself, then this is pointless. This is just an exercise in futility, or maybe it'll do me damage. So I take a long break, and I'm carefully considering right now whether or not to continue the communication. But yesterday he did tell me he was going to call fire down upon me. And, you know, at that moment, I was going to reply. And I thought, no, don't just reply. And don't say the things that race through your head. I mean, a lot of things race through my head. Many, many of them I never say. But it's like, oh, well, go ahead. I wouldn't say that to somebody like that because they have no power whatsoever. But the thing that has power over them does have some power. So, you know, I don't stick my finger in the devil's eye, and I don't tell demons that, oh, you want to mess with me? You talking to me? I don't do that. I don't talk to the devil. I don't talk to demons. You shouldn't really talk to them at all unless you know you're in the right place and you have authority. And you can do what Yeshua says, which is, you know, get out. But if you're filled with doubt or any fear, or you don't know what your authority is and you don't know whether you're in the right place, you don't know if you're standing in authority and there's not something that's convicting you that you're not dealing with, then do yourself a favor and don't be presumptuous and start speaking careless stuff to spiritual forces. Because you can open a door where you can get hurt. And, you know, you might get hurt and you might learn something and then the Lord may heal you, put you back together, and you might be stronger and wiser after that, but you don't have to learn by being presumptuous. So I did answer, but the answer wasn't personal. It wasn't about what he could or couldn't do to me. It was really just about the subjects at hand, and I replied what I thought was fitting. And so I actually don't know if I should continue with that. See, one thing I've learned, tell me if this ever happens to you. You ever get into a certain situation and you get engaged with it, and the other side of whatever it is, other person, they're fully engaged, and you're both just completely fully engaged. You know what I'm talking about? It's really easy not to think really well when you get like that. I mean, your thoughts might be really sharp. I mean, they might be really logical and intellectual and smart, but they may be totally missing the mark every word you speak. Because you start fighting against something that you reacted to and you think you understand it, and the principles might even be the right ones, but you're not speaking to the right thing. Because the problem isn't the problem. Your diagnosis, my diagnosis, isn't the diagnosis of the great physician. It's from my own head that tempts me to think I'm so smart that I can come up with the answer. When it's in tune with what the Spirit's doing, then maybe it is the right thing. But I will tell you, if you think about it, if you're sensitive to it, if you ask the Lord to show you, you begin to notice the difference after a while. And one of the things I can tell you is that if I get an email that, you know, like makes my stomach change, you know, like not feel as good as it did before I got it, I can't answer that email if it's even wise to answer in an email. If it is, I can't do it until I can do it without any of that happening in me, without feeling like I have to, whatever the thing is. I know I can't do it until I can write it and send it with just nothing but peace. Because if I can't, see, I'm still striving, I'm still posturing, and I'm still trying to come up with the right tactic to win or to prove something. But when I'm calm, and I mean, by the way, praying about it is part of that. But when I'm calm and I just have this like peaceful assurance. Have you ever felt peaceful assurance? Then I know I can speak. Then I know I can send something if that's the right thing to do. And a lot of times it's the wrong thing to do. Sending things in print is oftentimes the worst possible thing you can do. And, you know, you can't erase something that you sent somewhere else. Did you know that? And something you sent somewhere else can be copied and sent to every person on the face of the earth. Did you know that? Especially nowadays. You can do it in a few seconds all over the place. So at any rate, I think the Lord has opened our mouths. I think he wants to open them more. I think he wants to put what he wants spoken into our hearts and minds and it to come out of our mouths. And like when we go over to Bard, I'm not always aware of this. It's like, well, I could come up with something to say. Or I could say what the Lord gives me to say. And I have to move slower for the second one to happen. I have to slow myself down. And, you know, I love talking. I love talking to people. I like talking to people that agree with me. I love to talk to people that don't agree with me. I can get all caught up in it, in my own head. Just me. My ego, my thoughts, my stuff. But that's not what's going to do the work of the Holy Spirit. He uses our head. He uses our intellect. He uses what we understand. mean, he uses our whole person, but it can't just be coming from us and our devices. And so, it's the Lord that brings people to himself. The Spirit that draws people. And it's the truth of the gospel that reaches them. And have you ever noticed how easy it is to speak thoughts of yours instead of just, I mean, not that you should just quote scriptures, because I don't think that's the best thing to do. But if what the Lord says in his word is never coming out of your mouth in the discussion, there's power in the scriptures. There's power in speaking out of the scriptures. And I think sometimes we can just get led away from doing that. So anyway, I think that'd be a good thing to take a hold of today. What Judah's mouth was opened to say. And I think maybe that's the main thing for today. But I had this in mind, and I think I'm still going to do it since I have enough time. There was a few years ago, there was an Orthodox group in the city that produced a tract, a little pamphlet. And on the front of it, it said Isaiah 53, I think. And then there's a question. It was something like, "Who do you think this is about?" And these were Orthodox Jews who don't believe in Yeshua passing out this tract. And the interesting thing was is that when people were getting the tract from them, and they were handing them out to Jewish people, some of the people that, you know, whose hands they ended up in, just started to curse them because they assumed it was a tract about Yeshua. That's interesting, isn't it? Why would they assume such a thing? Yeah. Yeah. They thought they were Jews for Jesus, which I'm not against, but it's a checkered thing, but it's not my favorite organization in the world. I have some disagreements, not really doctrinally so much. And it's also changed, I think, from what I mostly recall when I think of Jews for Jesus. I'm not against them. They did produce an 89-page book about essentially why you shouldn't be messianic. So anyway, forget that. The point is that Isaiah 53, by some people, is just avoided. Some people wrongly think that the rabbis intentionally chose not to use it in the prophetical readings because of some agenda, but I actually think it's just because it could be. It could be because of that. The thing is, there are all kinds of passages that they don't read from the prophets and the prophetical readings through the 52 weeks of the year. But it does beg the question, though, no matter who's asking the question, who is this about? And there are a whole bunch of views about who this is about. One view is that it's the people of Israel. The people. So I always think, I would ask people, well, can the whole people of Israel offer themselves as a human sacrifice for the atonement of themselves and all that will be redeemed? I don't think so. So anyway, I'm going to read it. Who has believed what they heard from us? And to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? For he grew up before him like a young plant and like a root out of dry ground. He had no form or majesty that we should look at him, and no beauty that we should desire him. He sounds like a male human being. That's generally what I think of. He was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief, and as one from whom men hide their faces. He was despised, and we esteemed him not. Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows, yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace. And with his stripes we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned everyone to his own way. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity, the sin of us all. He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. Like a lamb that is led to the slaughter, like a sheep that before its shearers is silent, he opened not his mouth. By oppression and judgment he was taken away. And as for his generation who considered that he was cut off out of the land of the living, stricken for the transgression of my people, they made his grave with the wicked and with a rich man in his death, although he had done no violence and there was no deceit in his mouth. Yet it was the will of the Lord to crush him. He has put him to grief. When his soul makes an offering for sin, he shall see his offering. He shall prolong his days. The will of the Lord shall prosper in his hand. Out of the anguish of his soul he shall see and be satisfied. By his knowledge shall the righteous one, my servant, make many to be accounted righteous, and he shall bear their iniquities. Therefore, I will divide him a portion with the many, and he shall divide the spoil with the strong, because he poured out his soul to death and was numbered with the transgressors. Yet he bore the sin of many and makes intercession for the transgressors. You ever thought of that? It sounds like after he went through all this, after he died, after he gave himself as an offering, he makes intercession for the transgressors. So, the Orthodox group that passed that out wanted people to conclude it was a reference to a person, the Messiah. I think they were right as far as that goes. I, of course, believe that this passage is talking about the Messiah and that the Messiah is Yeshua. And that all these things happened to him, and including that he makes intercession for transgressors, even after he died. And so, when we go down to the river with some bread and toss it in, this is what I'm going to be thinking about. I'm going to be thinking about the one that went through all of this for me. Yeshua, who went through all that he suffered for the joy that was set before him, despising the shame, because he gave his life for me, for us. And because of that, I'm healed, I'm given a new life, my mouth can be open. Amen. To speak the truth. And so there's great meaning in revisiting things. Our own moment of coming to faith, if we remember it. If you don't remember it, I don't think that's a problem. You have plenty to remember. But I want us to continue the race. I want us to finish well. I want to finish well. I want you to finish well. I want people who are struggling in darkness that don't even know that anybody cares about them, let alone that there's a God that loves them, to find out. And they won't hear without someone telling. And faith comes by hearing. Hearing comes by, well, I mean, it means more than one simple thing, but sound comes to your ear. Like, which sound? The sound of freedom, of truth in Messiah. That sound can come through you from God's throne by grace, and he can use it to pluck people from the flames. And, you know, truth be told, I think every one of us at times simply gets so petrified of offending somebody, but we don't actually say what we were going to say, what we thought we should say, what the Spirit was saying. Well, just say this, you know, it doesn't really matter how it turns out. Just say this. Say what I'm prompting you. Fear can get us. But the Lord's power and the truth of his word and our faith in him can take us past all of our fears and all of our problems and all of our flaws and open our mouth, and what he gives us, we come out of it. We don't have to spend time worrying about what to say. He'll give us what to say. And so I think that the Lord was really saying something about mouths being open today. It's a true story of a guy who was healed, but it's a story of what the Lord does with us. And I'm just going to read before we go down to the river. The story of the sacrifice of Isaac is something that, at least in some places, is remembered and looked at and thought about with regard to Tashlich. And it's really because Abraham made a choice between being wholeheartedly given to God's will or trying to keep what he had in hand for himself. And he offered it all to God. It's about one simple thing, really. It's about God wants your whole heart. He wanted Abraham's whole heart. Abraham gave him his whole heart. And so he was willing to give up whatever he thought he had. And we learn later, I think it's in Hebrews, that Abraham considered that God was able even to raise the dead, so that even the death of all of his dreams wouldn't be the death of his dreams, because God had promised, so he believed God no matter what. So, and then in Micah 7, 18, 19, and 20, it says this: Who is a God like you who pardons iniquity and passes over the rebellious act of the remnant of his possession? He does not retain his anger forever, because he delights in unchanging love. He will again have compassion on us. He will tread our iniquities underfoot. Yes, you will cast all their sins into the depths of the sea. You will give truth to Jacob and unchanging love to Abraham, which you swore to our forefathers from days of old. I would just add this one thing with respect to the threat of fire being called down upon me. The context was I was defending God's choice of the people of Israel and saying that the people of Israel can't simply be just changed into a bunch of non-Jews who now own everything that God used to say Israel had. That just doesn't work. That's not the way that it is. That even unfaithful Israel, and we all know, I mean, in the liturgy and the Machzor and a whole bunch of places in traditional Judaism, all the flaws of Israel are spoken of. It's not about, we're so great, we never did anything wrong, except in some really liberal places where they never even look at the scriptures. I have run into that. So the thing was, basically what I was doing was simply saying, no, yeah, the Lord does make all people into one, but he doesn't turn everybody into exactly the same thing, meaning that if you're actually a Jew, now to be a Jew, you got to become one of these people. It doesn't matter that you're Jewish. It doesn't matter that you descended from those people. It's meaningless. See, no matter what, if you really look at the scriptures, no matter how miserably Israel has failed at certain points, there's always a promise of restoration. And I don't see how Israel as a people can be restored if they're restored by using somebody else. It's not a question of pure gene lines. It was never about that. But the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and a whole bunch of things are promised to them. And Paul even says of them, to them, he's talking about unbelieving Jews, to them belong the patriarchs, the promises, the covenants, the temple worship, and I think he even says, and the glory. To them. And then, I believe, if you continue on in that passage, that when all Israel turns to God, cries out to him, I believe it will actually be a time when a revival like's never been seen on the face of earth will be unleashed, and a huge mass from the nations will be saved. And so the thing is, I don't care if somebody thinks I'm wrong. I don't care if people say, no, I think it's like this. And I'm willing to have discussions with people like that most of the time. And I learn from some of them. They're honest believers who have honest thoughts. They really think the things they think. It's worth communicating about them. If all of the people in the discussion can do something other than just say, well, I'm going to call fire down on you and incinerate you because you're rejecting what I have said, and that's rejecting God. Yeah, that I did explain, you know, that tactic is kind of a tactic from weakness. It's like a threat. It's like, you know, I mean, you don't need to do that if you have the truth or if you really have confidence. But so the thing is, the people of Israel were chosen by God, not because they're so great, not because they were many, because they didn't even exist when he chose them. They were the least. And God says, and they know, I did this, 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 and this, not because of your righteousness, but for the sake of my own name. I'm going to prove what I'm going to prove using you. And see, to me, that's the biggest encouragement there could be for anybody, whether you're Jewish by birth or not, which is God proves himself to be true, and it doesn't depend on how great I am. He'll use me no matter how flawed I am. If I trust him, if I have faith in him, if I ask him, if I seek him, it's about the perfection of God and the perfection of his Son by whom I receive my righteousness. So, God's faithful promises and use and choosing of Israel, no matter what they did, tells me that he will be faithful to me and not say, oh, I noticed a flaw. You know? So, your mouth can speak the truth just like any other mouth on the face of the earth can if God opens it. And God will use that. And let's believe that. And whatever else the Lord brings to your mind, you can symbolically cast away whatever you have to cast away. And if it's a mouth that's not open as you believe it should be, then cast it away and get a new mouth. Get an open mouth. Or whatever the Lord puts on your heart. So, Father, I thank you. I just ask you to bring encouragement. I thank you so much for loving us so much. I just desire that we be so completely convinced of your love that we have unshakable confidence, assurance, and faith in your faithfulness to us and your faithfulness to use us for your purposes, and that we would offer it all to you in Yeshua's name.